So everyone's here now, so I'm going to kick off now. Okay. So the basic, you know, I'm going to answer all various questions. I'm also happy to discuss and answer whatever questions you guys want. But the basic, like, statement I want to kick off with is just that Givewall has had certain criteria for years, and those have been kind of strong evidence of positive impact on people's lives, and positive impact is defined using various proxies that have been constant for the last few years. Cost effectiveness, determined in terms of, you know, dollars per positive impact on someone's life. Room for more funding. Okay, those have been our main, and transparency. So those have been our main criteria. So if you robotically apply those criteria, and you're not using any judgment, and you're not using any sort of, you know, intuitive, intangible arguments, and you're also not using any sort of intuitive, intangible concerns, because we know people have a lot of those about cash, then, you know, GiveDirectly is one of our top three charities, and I don't really think there's any question about it. You know, there's very strong evidence that cash transfers increase the wealth and consumption of the people who receive them. In the short term, the evidence is very strong. People sometimes call the evidence even tautological. That's why we talk about low burden of proof, but there it is, and that's one of our measures, and it has been for years. In the longer term, the evidence is a lot weaker. The evidence is also a lot weaker for deworming. Cash versus deworming, I think the strength of evidence is, you know, it could be argued either way, but it's certainly not strongly in favor of one or the other. FedNets is a different case. We've got saving lives versus long-term improvement, but FedNets, well, AMF is ranked above GiveDirectly. So, you know, that's evidence of effectiveness and cost effectiveness. I think on room for more funding and transparency, GiveDirectly is stronger than SCI, substantially so on both criteria, and up there with AMF. So if you're just applying the criteria, it's, you know, one of the top three charities we've seen by the criteria, and, you know, below AMF, but the argument against SCI, I think, is pretty hazy. And so the thing that I want to kick off with is kind of, you know, what are the concerns with that statement that I just made? Or, like, what, you know, is it that you guys don't agree with the criteria, don't like the criteria, or don't agree that GiveDirectly is, like, you know, roughly as good a fit by those criteria as SCI? And then we can talk about the relative rankings and why we rank one above the other. And we can also talk about things like, you know, doesn't cash have a lot of concerns? And, you know, aren't there lots of reasons that it can go badly? And, you know, we can talk about that. But I think the first thing I want to get into is just that statement that there's nothing we're doing here that's kind of radically stepping out or outside our criteria or getting really intuitive or anything like that. Like, we're basically, this recommendation is very consistent with following the criteria that we've had for a while now.
I'll take a stab. It's okay.
Yeah, go ahead then.
This is Phil, by the way, for everybody. And I've been pretty skeptical to Ellie and Holden about GiveDirectly. So let me just sort of try to respond reasonably directly to what you just said there. I think you mentioned 3 points, which is, you know, is it having a positive impact? Is it transparent? Do they have room for more funding? Possibly missed one or two others at the beginning there. But with regard to the latter 2 points, transparency and room for funding, I think everybody, I would imagine, you know, there's pretty widespread agreement that those are important criteria, and I don't personally see any issue with GiveDirectly on either of those points, and I doubt many others would as well. I would argue that those are necessary points but not sufficient points. My local symphony orchestra, you know, might be very transparent about how they spend their money and what they do, and they might have more room for more funding.
Sure,
but
we're arguing it meets all four of the criteria.
Okay. So I'm just saying that those two are necessary but far and away, you know, far from being sufficient for justifying something.
We agree.
Going back to then, you know, so then you've got a question about the impact, and I think you've got two points with the impact. From a mathematical standpoint, you have, you know, what's the sign? Is it positive or negative? And you know, in most cases, most of the charities GiveWell looks at are going to have a positive impact. That's not an overly hard burden to meet, and even, you know, much simpler charities would meet that burden. The real question is magnitude, to me. You know, is the unit of positive impact per dollar given, taking into account kind of a variety of impacts. Some of the impacts of GiveDirectly can potentially be negative. We can get into those later on. But is the unit of impact likely to be, you know, comparable to Against Malaria, to SCI, to other charities that you guys give wealth has looked at before? And I'll just wrap it up real quick for now by saying I don't see the evidence. I'm not convinced on that point. That's my major concern.
Right. So I think just to respond to Phil quickly, I mean, the exact question that we're trying to address. And when Holden says, you know, broadly, the evidence for cash is about as strong, all told, as the evidence for deworming, we don't just mean is it positive or negative, but the magnitude of the impact per dollar given. You know, while we think, you know, if we sort of had the bet, we would bet on deworming over cash. It's, you know, by no means an obvious, you know, an obvious answer to the question. And sort of in the same way that we would all bet on bed nets over deworming as accomplishing more good per dollar, we'd have bet on deworming over cash as accomplishing more good per dollar. But we're by no means like trying to leave that question out of the framework or even these issues of transparency or room for more funding overwhelming.
And I want to add a couple things on sign of impact versus magnitude of impact. So, you know, one observation is just that it takes arguably a certain magnitude of impact to be able to pick it up in the kind of studies that people often do of these interventions. And that's why, you know, while I agree that most charities probably have a positive sign, to find interventions that have kind of, you know, you've seen the evidence documented in kind of an empirical way is more rare, and we have seen that with cash. And the other thing, the other way in which I'd put the magnitude issue is that, you know, when we do our best attempt to do cost-effectiveness analysis, we're getting that cash is 2 to 5x less cost-effective than deworming, which is, you know, uh-huh. in the and well within the margin of error. You know, there's certainly perspectives and assumptions that would make it come out better. In fact, in about a quarter of the scenarios that we ran through our kind of, you know, thing, it is better. And so it's kind of within the margin of error. It's not a huge difference. Evidence of effectiveness or strength of evidence kind of refers to the robustness of those figures. So you could say, well, you know, one is better according to our best estimate, but it's that estimate is much shakier. And so in some sort of, you know, Bayesian regression sense, you should adjust it down further. But we don't think that's the case. We think that when we estimate cash and we estimate deworming and we come out with that 2 to 5x ballpark, we're using roughly comparable evidence bases.
So,
I mean,
so,
sorry. This is Peter here. So you said in your introduction that you wanted to put aside for the moment that the doubts about cash, but I think if we are talking about positive impact, then you can't put that aside because that's what it's about. I mean, the question is whether giving cash has an overall long-term positive impact, and that means not just a positive impact for the people whom you're giving the cash now and, let's say, for the next 6 months or a year, but does it benefit them over a longer term, and does it benefit people as a whole? I mean, maybe it benefits them greatly, but disadvantages other people in the community. That's a possibility that needs to be considered, or maybe it causes disruptions in the community as a whole. So I think we would need to have good evidence of that, which is not going to be based just on how the people that you've given the cash to tell you that they've spent it or whether they are pleased to have got it, but would need some more detailed study. And I suppose my concern is that you seem to have jumped on GiveDirectly very quickly, whereas, you know, there are other organizations that have been in the field trying to do good for a long time that you've not considered acceptable. And so in terms of saying the suggestion that in some way you've changed your criteria, I think rather than pushing harder and continuing to push with some other organizations who prima facie do good things like surgery on women with fistulas or eye operations that restore people's sight, you've jumped on something quite new where the data is not really very solid yet. Now, you know, if you'd waited 5 years and there'd been good follow-ups that include the impact of cash transfers on the community as a whole in which they're given, I wouldn't have a problem. But I do have a problem with the evidence that you're presenting now that it actually does have an overall positive impact, as I say, not just on the individuals, but on all of those who might be affected by it.
Okay. So I think it's good to try and, you know, cut these up in a point. So I'm going to try and take a couple of these one at a time and, you know, happy to keep going after that and keep listing concerns. So, you know, first off on concerns, and, you know, there was kind of two concerns that Peter articulated about cash. And one is, like, we've got this kind of evidence of positive impacts, but could it have negative impacts? And, you know, are we capturing those negative and offsetting impacts? And, you know, my answer is we don't know for sure, and we can't guarantee that there's no negative impacts in the community, but the same largely applies to top health interventions. And so, you know, certainly many people have expressed the legitimate concern that with bed nets you could be getting a Malthusian dynamic where you're increasing population growth and reducing the number of resources available per person. Now, there's plenty of arguments against this. You know, there's been the argument made that, well, when people lower infant mortality, they actually have fewer children, not more children. Well, this is an argument that's been made. But I don't think it's by any means an argument that's been established. I think, in fact, it's kind of the argument is a little shaky in my view, and that's something that we're going to write about at some point in the future. But the point is, you know, we can't guarantee that saving infant lives is not leading to this Malthusian dynamic. I think it's probably not, but it's, you know, that's kind of one of these judgment calls we're making. Another thing with bed nets is insecticide resistance. You know, that's another thing where you could be contributing to insecticide resistance. We have looked into this as well as we can. We don't think that it's, you know, a big enough issue to cancel out the good that bed nets do, but it's something that is a legitimate concern and that we can't prove isn't a concern. Now, when we move over to deworming, you know, here's the case where Peter talks about how with cash, all we have is kind of evidence that people report having higher income down the road. We don't know whether that's because they're just reporting it or because they really had it or because, you know, maybe they do have it, but it's at the cost of others in their community. But this is actually exactly the same situation that we have with deworming. It's the same, I mean, it's essentially the same sort of thing. I mean, it's all self-reports of, you know, when, how their health is and how their consumption is and how their income is. And I think there's actually a quite plausible story that the way that deworming has had its positive impacts is by raising school attendance and therefore in some zero-sum way improving people's earning power by improving kind of the, you know, the credentials that they're able to amass. We have not proven that this is a human capital effect. We haven't proven, you know, we haven't proven anything like that. I mean, the evidence is quite thin. And so, you know, I'm not meaning to knock down any of our interventions. Like I think these are all great charities to give to. I think they all do a great amount of good, but there's a huge amount of uncertainty with all of them. And, you know, I don't have a problem with people saying, well, some of these uncertainties bother me more than others. And, you know, I'm personally not very worried about Malthusian dynamics, but I'm very worried about alcohol consumption. I mean, that's a very valid point of view, but I don't think that the evidence is really supporting that, like, some of these concerns are much stronger than others. And so when we make our recommendations, we're going with what we think. And we think they're kind of comparable. I mean, we think that basically these are all interventions where the preponderance of the evidence says they do a lot of good. And there's a lot of doubts and gaps and questions about that evidence.
If I can push back a little bit on some of the examples you just gave. One thing, actually, jumping back to what Ellie said, Ellie was doing a lot of comparison to SCI, and I realize SCI is your third-place charity and you have a lot of doubts to it. I think, really, you should sort of try to compare it to your strongest case, which is the bed nets, the AMF, rather than sort of a weaker sister, as it were. But addressing them briefly, the Malthusian population argument is a very interesting one, and it's one I've thought about myself, and I don't have a ready answer for that. It's a really tough issue because you can say, that's a 20-minute digression. I won't even go there. Insecticide resistance, you know, to some extent, you're basically just weak. That's something that would weaken the effect of the bed nets more so than it would be something that would make the bed nets negative on the whole. It's just saying that, well, if the insects develop resistance, then the bed nets will be 10%, 20%, 40% less effective in the future, which is not the same as saying that the bed nets will have a negative impact. And then very briefly on the SCI thing, arguing that education is a zero-sum credentialism, you know, I think that's a discussion one could have about, say, graduate school in the United States or Europe or whatever. But when you're talking about Africa, where I assume that sort of the median educational outcome is, what, grade school? Maybe a couple years past grade school? I seriously doubt, you know, keeping a kid in school 90% of the time versus 80% of the time while he's in third grade, fifth grade, trying to read is, you know, is simply an argument about credentialism, a zero-sum argument. That one strains credibility. And I guess I'd more broadly say, I think you do have to exercise judgment with all these things. Yes, every charity intervention, one can pretty much, just about anyone, you would think one could dream up negative scenarios as a possibility there, but you have to attach sort of weight and plausibility to those things, and that is subjective. And I can certainly see why you would have a different opinion than me. I would just say, you know, and maybe other people on this call, I would just say that my intuition makes some of these concerns about cash, the negative repercussions of cash, pretty significant.
Yeah, I mean, so on the, just quickly on the credentialism, like I think credentialism is a real issue in the developing world potentially. I mean, I don't you know have the, I think certainly like employers look at what grade you've completed, and just because a lot of people have not completed, you know, sort of 12th grade doesn't mean that distinctions and those competitions aren't going on with lower levels of education. And sort of anecdotally, that's been my experience, is that, you know, it does actually matter if you got through, you know, 8th grade or 6th grade. And, you know, having more attendance could affect that. And, like, it could be a temporary effect that doesn't really build your human capital over the long term, but allows you to attend enough school to get through some extra grades. And, you know, these are not huge effects that we're talking about. These are, you know, relatively small wage effects that are huge when you think about how little deworming costs. So, you know, as a minor point, I don't think that's such a crazy concern at all. But, you know, I mean, more broadly, I mean, I think these are – yeah, I mean, I think we're in agreement that these are all potential effects that could offset the good that's being done that we haven't measured. We haven't assessed the degree to which they offset that. And so, you know, it does come down to judgment calls. And we can, and that doesn't mean we can't talk about the judgment calls. So we can talk about them. But, you know, I think the way that I'm kind of trying to open up this call, you know, there's one reaction to give directly that says, I understand where you guys are coming from, but I disagree. And there's another angle that says, you know, I'm sort of incredulous and, you know, this is like some wild departure from what Givewell's always done. And, you know, I feel pretty emphatically that the second perspective is not the case, and that's kind of what I'm trying to kick off with trying to talk about. That doesn't mean that we won't talk about the other issue, which is like, where would you actually give and why we rank Give directly above SCI. The final thing I want to say is that I actually think comparisons between Give directly and SCI are much more apt than comparisons between Give directly and AMF. Because we ranked AMF above Give directly. And so there isn't, you know, to me, there's not much argumentative force in making points that AMF is better than Give directly because we've already said that. And so to the extent that we're, you know, getting pushback and that people think that we're doing something wrong with our recommendations, I mean, that the thing that we're doing wrong would be ranking Give directly above SCI. I think the comparison to AMF is I kind of don't really necessarily see the relevance.
A question and 2 points. The question is Holden, or I'm not sure if it was Holden or Elliot, the point. You mentioned that deworming is between 2 and 5 times as cost-effective as cash transfers, and that this already takes into account also considerations about how solid is the data, if I heard you correctly. So can you just clarify to me why that, in, you know, by your life doesn't pretty much settle the issue? Is it just the issues of room for farting and transparency and such, or is there something more basic?
So the issue is nothing about the interventions. So I think if you were to switch the programmatic focus of Give directly and SCI, and you said the people running Give directly with the process they have and the transparency they have and all that are now doing deworming, and the people running SCI are now doing cash transfers, at that time we would recommend the deworming program over the cash transfer program, and we would do so more strongly. So we're not arguing the cash transfers are a better intervention than deworming. We do rank Give directly above SCI despite, not because of, the intervention differences. We do concede that, and the reason for that ranking being as it is, you know, we think the interventions are close enough to make it justified that we rank them as we do, but the reason that ranking is the way it is, is because of confidence in the organization, learning opportunities, both of which are related to transparency and room for more funding. And we do think indirectly, it's not just meeting the criteria of room for more funding and transparency, but it's substantially better than SCI in both.
And then just, you know, the kind of the bottom line of saying that one intervention is 2 to 5 times as cost effective as the other, I think oversimplifies the difficulty with which the difficulty in arriving at that type of estimate. You know, one of the things we did is we were trying to arrive at the cost effectiveness of the different interventions was a recognition of just how many judgment calls for which there was very little basis in evidence or fact we had to make in order to arrive at those numbers. And so while, you know, I think the consensus is that cash is less cost effective than deworming, it remains the case that there's many plausible assumptions that lead cash to being more cost effective than deworming. And so it's not, you know, it's not a settled outcome.
So I do want to make sure that I don't ignore Peter's questions about the kind of jumping on one organization, because there's a lot going on, so I didn't get to them, but I want to get to those if I can. So if there's an immediate response to what Elliot and I just said, go ahead, but I do want to get to that too.
No, let's go back to
okay.
I guess another clarification with I mean, in a way, let me repeat one of Peter's points, which is relevant here. Isn't the fact that cash transfers are sort of a newer intervention, have been, you know, around for less time to allow us to observe without too much investigation some freak bad side effects, isn't that something that we should consider as kind of having less evidence on its side?
Sure. I don't really see it that way. I mean, I think cash transfers are one of the most heavily studied interventions out there. I don't think it's the case that this is a wildly new intervention that has no evidence base direct betting and give directly based on some midline data that we're doing. There's been, you know, a lot of cash transfer government programs in the developing world. And generally, like, I don't remember the exact time period when they started, like the 80s or the 90s, but at the time there were like a lot of concerns and they were extremely controversial, and generally the concerns have kind of died down and they've spread very widely. And they're kind of all over the developing world now, and we looked at all this, and, you know, we did things like we did a media search and we looked for coverage of these things and, you know, noticed that pattern that I described, that they were controversial, but in terms of like these freak bad side effects that are very tangible and very visible, you know, we didn't find those. And the concerns we found about cash transfers are more along the lines of like, well, they're not the single best way to help people, or there are times when there's better ways, but, you know, these kind of feedback side effects we didn't find. So, you know, that doesn't tell the whole story, because GiveDirectly's program is different in some ways. It is a wealth transfer program. It is unconditional. Those are not like total. There have been programs that have similarities with these things, but that is something new. But these are kind of subtle differences. And, you know, with any intervention, I mean, there's always subtle differences. I mean, resistance is emerging with bed nets, and baseline mortality rates are lower than they used to be. So that intervention isn't exactly the same as it used to be. And, you know, deworming, I mean, the evidence, as we know, comes from this kind of setting that's very unrepresentative. And the setting that they're doing it in aren't necessarily like the ones where they did the study. So, again, I think these are roughly comparable, and I don't think that, you know, GiveDirectly as an organization is very new, but I don't think that cash transfers as an intervention have this, like, much larger rookie effect than the other things.
This is Eric. I guess I'm coming at this from kind of a different angle. I know we've been doing a lot of talk about comparing GiveDirectly to SCI, and you know, I'm willing to accept that GiveDirectly meets or mostly meets, you know, GiveWell's criteria, and I'm willing to accept that you know, the SCI has some weak organizational aspects, and maybe the evidence of deworming is not that strong. But I guess I'm kind of wondering, well, what about all those other organizations? You know, Peter had mentioned those who do, you know, low-cost surgeries on, you know, fistula or blindness or something like that.
You know, there's lots of other organizations that work on, you know, clean water or, you know, a lot of different interventions you can, and I'm sure you have, you know, talked with the people at some place like Innovation for Poverty Action and sort of, you know, looked at the interventions that they've found evidence of impact. And so I'm kind of trying to, you know, compare these to the wider array and really trying to understand, you know, the comparison, not just SEI to give directly, but everyone.
Yeah, I think there's, you know, for one thing, I don't think that surgeries and water are quite comparable to cash transfers. You know, for one thing, I mean, our criteria lay this out, but cash transfers are kind of directly hitting one of the metrics we have, which is like increased wealth or incomes or consumption for extremely poor people. Whereas, you know, clean water, you still have this question of like, how does that affect health? And so that's, I mean, that's sort of one answer. And, you know, cash transfers have been much more heavily studied than water or surgery programs. And so I don't think these are exactly on a level playing field. And so I don't think that comparison is quite there, but I think it's partly there. I mean, I think we have talked about this. While I don't fully embrace the comparison you made, I do think cash transfers stand on a higher plane in terms of, you know, whatever you want to call it, in terms of kind of provenness by the criteria we've laid out. You know, we have talked about surgery and water as two other possibilities, and maybe there's one or two I'm forgetting, although I think those are basically the two that are kind of so intuitive that, you know, we might accept them without a large number of studies, which would actually be different from cash, because cash, there's a large number of studies. There's not for water and surgery. So we've talked about that, and we have looked at water and surgery organizations and, you know, really haven't found one that can do for water and surgery what Give Directly does for cash. And this isn't a closed book, but we've looked, and in fact, we've been looking for longer, and we've had more chances to find and examine such an organization than we have for Give Directly. And this is, you know, this is certainly a factor that people should be aware of, is that when we talk to water organizations, you know, there's questions like, well, okay, you built a well, but did the actual water quality improve? Like, that's not even a question about, you know, recipient ends. That's not a question of measured outcomes. That's like a very basic in-between question. Like, you know, you built a well, but did the water quality improve? And that's something that we're generally not able to get answered in a systematic way. With surgery organizations, a lot of times the question is not only around surgery quality, which we do have concerns about, but also for more funding. And, you know, what are more dollars going to do? And is it going to lead to more things? And, you know, it's important to note that Give Directly, from the very time we encountered it, answered these questions very clearly, very quickly, very directly, in a way that, you know, if people want to know why we jumped on them and why they kind of sprang to the top of our list, that has a lot to do with it. I mean, these are questions that we put a lot of effort into getting charities to answer, and it's just an inevitability that charities that kind of jump on the chance to answer them and answer them really well and really clearly and in a way that we can understand, I mean, those will in a sense, you know, skip some steps, because where we might have spent 2 years talking to water organizations and kind of failing to find one that would answer our questions, if a water organization came to us and just nailed all our questions, I mean, it would be a very different conversation, and we'd be treating them like we did Give Directly. So that is a fact. That is something that happened. And I don't really see it as a problem for our process, because the goal of our process is to be efficient. And so when there's a charity that is like, you know, you're getting 10 times the information per unit of time, I don't think that's irrelevant. It doesn't mean we're ignoring charities. It doesn't mean we're requiring that. But, you know, it does speed things along, because we need a certain amount of information to recommend a charity.
It is an interesting question. I mean, I think I can see the rationale for giving charities some sort of a little more kind of higher ranking than they deserve in terms of, you know, the impact per dollar from donations, just because they report well to an organization and they speak your language and it's easy for you to work with them, and they are, you know, the rationale is partly you want to create incentives for charities to do that, because as GiveWell has shown so well over the years, we need to have charities that do that more than we currently do. On the other hand, you could also do that to an excess. You could be basically focusing a little too much attention on the things that make your life easy instead of on the things that make the lives of the global poor and sick. you know, a little easier. So there is, I did worry a bit about some sort of evaluator's bias there. Something to be aware of. It's just complex.
Yeah, I think it's a bias. We could discuss how appropriate it is, though I think it's important to take away from this conversation that the reason we don't have a water and surgery recommendation is really just a function of the fact that we've tried very hard to find those organizations for 5 years, or perhaps if we didn't look very closely at them in the past year for the first 4 years of our existence. And the reason that we don't have one is that we haven't, you know, found the organization implementing the intervention that we can have confidence in. And we have looked at a lot of organizations pretty closely in trying to find them. And I think there's reasonable reasons why for example, in surgery, it's hard to find a way to translate additional dollars into more surgeries. The reason may just be that there's a lack. It seems, somewhat plausible to me that the bottleneck to more surgeries is having qualified surgeons, not just having the money to, to pay them. And it's not, easy to turn philanthropic dollars into more surgeries. So anyhow, I think that, to the extent there's this question of, like, why aren't we looking in other areas, I think we may have done a poor job communicating about the areas and the extent to which we've looked. But the reason we don't have those recommendations is just that we haven't been able to find them yet.
What about other deworming organizations? Sorry.
Go ahead.
Well, just a word on why not other deworming organizations?
Sure. It's the same issue. I mean, it's the same. So one way of putting this, I mean, you talk about a bias in terms of charities that make our lives easier instead of charities that help people, and certainly I would be worried about such a bias. And in a sense, if you kind of structure things a certain way, you could argue that we have that bias. But I think it's important to note that, we're not talking about a case. What we're not saying is that we put 10 times as much effort into Give Directly as other charities or as into other causes. That's not the case. In fact, what is more the case, at least for, like, the initial phase or the initial, like, getting up to the point where we have enough information that they look promising, is I would say we put 10% as much effort into Give Directly as other organizations. But that 10% of effort yielded enough information to get above the bar where we're ready to deep dive and then recommend a charity. And that is, that 10% versus 10x is a very important number to think about when you're thinking about bias, because it would be bias if we said, these guys make our lives easier, so we like them, so let's spend more time on them. But it's the opposite when we say we need a certain amount of information to recommend a charity, and when we invest equally in every charity, this one gives us enough information to go ahead and recommend it. It's still a form of bias. You could still call it a bias, but it's different in terms of what it's going to mean for other charities and what it means for, like, other charities' opportunities to get on our list if they can give us the information we need and what we know a normal amount of back and forth. So that's one thing. That's the case for me. I mean, we've looked at every deworming charity we can find. We've contacted them. We've talked to them. And it just gets, like, we understand we're more with both.
Holden, stop for a second. We're missing about three quarters of what you're saying, or at least I am. I don't know if you've got somebody making other noises by your microphone or if your microphone's wrong, but it's not coming through.
Okay. Nothing.
Now it's better.
Yeah, I don't know. So it's probably just Skype. It's probably just, internet, because there's nothing going on. But anywho, so the point is that it's not that we have this bias where we gave Directly more of a chance. I would say we gave them, less of a chance than we've given many other organizations. But with that chance, they got us enough information to get over our bar. And when we're talking about using it time efficiently, I think that is a rational decision. And when you ask about deworming organizations, it's a similar answer, that we've contacted deworming organizations and we've tried to get this information that we need to have the basics, like, where are more dollars going? And it's just, like, in the time frames we've had with the hours investments we've put in, and there are limits to how much we can even put in, because a lot of times they just say, well, I'll get back to you. It just hasn't happened. And so, that's one answer. I also want to quickly address, someone said that kind of the reason to have this bias is that it creates incentives, but there's other reasons too, although I agree about the incentives. One reason is the reason I just gave. It's a pure efficiency thing. It's just, if the same number of hours yield a recommended charity versus if they yield just continuing to not know how a charity spends its money and what to do next, that is an efficiency thing, and that yields more recommended charities per hour spent. And then another reason that that I think this bias can be helpful is for learning in the future. And so, you know, GiveWell, we still very much see ourselves as entering a sector that hasn't had a lot of transparency and hasn't had a lot of attempts to kind of systematically learn from mistakes. And so what we really want to do is we don't want to just be putting views out there that are kind of convincing according to kind of formal criteria and leave it at that. It's very important to us that when we go out and make a recommendation, that we have some sense that we're able to see how that recommendation goes in the future. I think there's real value in that. There's value that improves the value of future giving. And when you have a charity that communicates efficiently, that is a charity where you're going to be able to tell how things went and you're going to be able to learn. And when you have a charity that doesn't communicate efficiently, you're going to give and you're never going to find out how it went. And so how different people value that learning opportunity versus the direct impact is going to vary. But we value it fairly highly, and we've been upfront about that.
So,
You mentioned some cost effectiveness comparisons, and they were very sort of rangy, you know, 2 to 5x this and that. And I've seen, you know, I think at least for AMF, you've at times reduced, you know, dollars per life saved, or maybe you do it by dailies or whatever. Do you have a spreadsheet for GiveDirectly where where I guess one could look and see sort of what impacts you're estimating, what your assumptions are, so that, you know. Is there any sort of, I realize a lot of it's qualitative and not quantitative, but do you have things at a quantitative level?
Yeah, we wrote a blog post about the relative cost effectiveness of the three, and it included two different spreadsheets using two different frameworks. GiveDirectly was only in one of the spreadsheets, and that was the comparison to deworming. And yeah, we lay it all out there, and we
make
it
spreadsheet accessible. Was it linked or whatever from your blog? Okay.
Yes.
Could you actually, you know what, rather than me hunting, if you remember where that blog post is, could you either, like, maybe send out an email with a link to either to me or to all the participants in this call or whatever? I'd be probably curious to take a look at that at some point.
Okay. I can send it right now.
It doesn't have to be right now, but at some point.
Okay. Yeah.
Thanks.
So a separate point from what we've discussed so far is this following one. Medical organizations that give bedness or pills for deworming usually they address and prevent or treat a disease that affects people who are sick, but also typically they focus on a population that is relatively poor. So the target population, the people who are helped by this, have two things not going for them. They're both sick and poor. Whereas cash transfers, clearly in the examples of GiveDirectly, tackle just poverty. People typically do not spend this. I mean, in your list, I don't see anything kind of directly medical. There are some, you know, potential effects on disease, being richer makes you less prone to be HIV, to get infected by HIV, or the roof can affect in the future disease status. But we are not talking basically about a population that is kind of twice badly off. And for me, maybe not for all of us, and maybe not by your lights as an organization that doesn't prioritize the worst off, for me that's very important. Just think for a minute about how much life is worth when you have not just poverty to deal with, but also severe diseases to deal with.
Sure. I mean, one thing I think it's important to note is that none of our top three charities are targeting sick people specifically. They're kind of preventative in nature. So Against Malaria Foundation distributes bed nets using universal coverage. It's not for people who have malaria, it's for everybody. And then the hope is that this prevents malaria. you know, that I think is still pretty directly linked to sickness and is important in your framework, but it's still good to note that. Deworming, on the other hand, I mean, that those people are not necessarily even sick by any traditional measure. I mean, this is kind of the great debate about deworming, is that the short-term effects of deworming are very hard to find. They may be negligible. They may be non-existent. It's often, these worms are often asymptomatic, and when they deworm people, they're not deworming people who have been confirmed as being infected or being symptomatic. Those people, you know, especially if you have symptoms, if you're experiencing symptoms for schistosomiasis, generally, you know, at least what you're supposed to do is you're supposed to go to a clinic and say I'm sick, and then they're supposed to give you this very cheap pill, and that's not what these deworming interventions do. These deworming interventions are doing mass population deworming, which means giving people a pill whether or not they're showing any symptoms, and the argument for deworming is not that it is reducing anything clinical. The argument is that it is a later-in-life benefit that is best measured, in our opinion, the most impressive measure is income. And so I don't think that distinction is quite as strong as the way it's just been drawn, especially when you compare to deworming. You know, on the other hand, I mean, if it's a very important personal value to you to help not just the poor but the sick or the people who are both poor and sick, I think it's perfectly legitimate to use that personal value in giving, but that value is not a part of our criteria. We're just kind of trying to do the most good per dollar spent, and, you know, even if that meant for someone who had it great but could have it even better, I mean, we wouldn't be opposed to it, but generally it's easier to get a lot of bang for your buck when you're helping people who are very poor and who have a lot of suffering, because it's kind of, you know, easier to alleviate suffering in poor people than it would be to, like, you know, greatly increase the quality of life of people who already have a lot. So, you know, there's a correlation, but that kind of general value system is not something that's ever been formally baked into our criteria or into the things we actually think we want to give to.
Alden or Ellie, you were going to respond to what I said, that I thought you jumped on Give Directly rather quickly, whereas, you know, I would totally understand it if you waited another 3 years and there was some more evidence about the long-term benefits and the lack of negative impacts and so on. Would you like to comment on that now?
Yeah, I mean, I largely have said what I was going to say on that topic, which is that it's not a rookie intervention. It's one of the most heavily studied interventions out there. Really, one of the very most, and, you know, I think probably the most studied non-health intervention we're aware of. And that, you know, the reason that Give Directly kind of had this accelerated transition up the rankings was because of the efficiency with which they got us information. And so, again, it's not that we dropped some other charity and said we're going to work on Give Directly, you know, instead, just because of, like, this initial screen, but it's that in a comparable amount of time spent, we got more information from them, and that put us in a better position to assess how they were going to be. So that's kind of, you know, that's the story of how it happened. There are a lot of other charities out there. We continue to look for them, but it's just a matter, you're trying to use your search resources efficiently, and you're putting what you think is a sufficient amount into each organization, and with some organizations that doesn't really go anywhere very fast, some it leads to a lot of information very quickly, and then you're sitting here in mid-2012 saying, well, we need information about this one to recommend it, but we might about that one. And, you know, our goal
is... But when you say... Sorry.
No, go ahead.
Sorry, maybe your line is breaking up. I thought you paused.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so when you say that cash transfers have been studied for a long time, isn't it true that these are basically conditional transfers? I mean, are there – it's not, as far as I'm aware, the case that organizations have just been handing out substantial amounts of wealth, not income transfers, not income support either. But, in other words, what Give Directly is doing is new in that respect, and may therefore be quite different in its impacts from the things that have been studied in the past.
Right. So we made the call that the evidence on conditional cash transfers... I'm getting some echo. What do you think? Thank you, back and call that game if I can cause a problem. Okay. I'm going to hang back and... Oh, it is going to cause a problem. Maybe I'll call in on my cell phone. Sorry, guys. I'm going to call in on my cell phone because I'm now getting some echo.
Okay.
Hi, I'm here on my cell phone.
Good.
Okay. So now I'm trying to remember where we were.
You were addressing the long-term studies of cost cash transfers have been largely conditional or in various otherwise,
right.
You know, income, so not comparable.
Okay. Well, I'm getting feedback on my end, but if no one else is, then I think we're fine.
So
just let me know the problem. Oh, gosh. Okay. Maybe I'll turn it up
phone.
To you. Wait, but hold this. All right, I'm going to try hanging up the computer. This may cut off the call. One sec. Okay. Am I getting feedback now?
Not from me. I'm hearing you well.
Yeah.
Okay. So unconditional cash transfers versus unconditional. We made the call that the evidence unconditional cash transfers could be extended to the other evidence. And the reason we did that is because the conditions are generally for things that people do for their children, and the effects were generally being found on the recipients of the transfer themselves. And so it's not kind of a plausible link that, you know, your consumption went up because you sent your child to school or brought them into a clinic. If anything, it should be the opposite effect. And so that was the call we made. And so, look, there's similar judgment calls in other areas. I mean, VetNets was not the exact same intervention at the time of study that it is now, and neither was the Werner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, go back to the point you said earlier. I mean, I don't think that this is a ridiculous rating or anything like that, or that it's a dramatic change. It does seem that perhaps it is a matter of judgment. I don't find some of the judgment calls you're making as persuasive as I have found them in the past, and that's really what my trouble is. So maybe. Maybe these are points that we just agree to disagree on for the moment.
Yeah, perhaps.
I think eventually,
and at the same time,
I was just saying eventually, the situation may resolve itself. Give it another few years and we'll no doubt get more evidence and then we'll be able to say,
right.
Hey, you guys were right after all, or I was right.
Peter, I have a challenge for you. So if it's kind of close to borderline, you know, so far we haven't mentioned at all the issues of personal liberty, which is important both in terms of the information that people have about what is exactly fantastically good for them in ways that are difficult for us to measure, and is relevant because we usually think that there are other reasons to let people keep their freedom. Or maximize the freedom and things like that. So doesn't that just kind of break the tie in favor of give directly?
Sorry, you're going to have to repeat the last part of that. You said we haven't talked about the issue of personal freedom, and then what?
So my challenge to us, not to you, Holden, and others in Gibral, is once you take that issue into account, doesn't that count in favor of give directly and give them a sort of edge?
I mean, I don't personally feel that way. I kind of feel like it's one of the arguments in favor of give directly, but there's arguments in favor of deworming, like the cost effectiveness analysis. So, I don't think it's a knockdown argument by any means. I don't think that just because people are getting cash and choose what to do with it, that means it's game over, and that's why we looked at all these other factors. But, you know.
So we all,
sure,
we all agree on that. But the question is, I mean, am I wrong in thinking that the calculations of cost effectiveness in no way take into account any plus points coming from the fact that it's the people who chose it? If so, and if the fact that people chose it should count some, then maybe that breaks the tie.
I mean, I think in a sense they implicitly take into account that people chose it, because the theory would be that when people get to choose, they make better decisions, and that leads to higher returns. So in that sense, it does. If you want to count personal liberty as like a totally separate moral consideration, like over and above the actual good that's done, or like improvement in humanitarian outcomes, I think that might change the calculation. I don't think it would necessarily overwhelm the cost-effectiveness argument. It would be different judgments by different people. you know, for myself, I'm pretty consequentialist. Like, I'm basically looking for things that do a lot of humanitarian good.
I'll just mention that, so I'm also consequentialist, but I do take personal liberty into account, for example, because one of the things that make a life better is to make choices for oneself. But I'm actually not as clear that this counts in favor of Give Directly as compared to charities that focus on health. Health often gives you, they Give Directly say that they're empowering the poor, that they give them more freedom, but health can empower you physically, and it can give you,
right.
You know, disability is something that undermines your abilities, your capabilities, your freedoms, and it's very important in terms of freedom to enhance that. And I think the website for kind of Give Directly really emphasizes that issue, and a lot of that is just that I think sometimes the experience of getting cash in hand is one of more liberation than that of getting goods in kind. But it's not necessarily even the experience that people feel when they get cash transfers. I can imagine that it goes the following way. When you go to school and somebody, you know, your kid gets the pills and you don't even know what's the source, it's not really embarrassing. You're not a beggar for having gotten money from strangers. But when you are somebody who is now on the payroll of these Western rich people, maybe that's undermining things psychologically in ways that actually bedness or deworming doesn't. So that issue is, I just want to put on record that's actually a quite complex one, and some of the supporters of,
right.
of Give Directly paid up a little too much.
Right. I agree it's complex. One observation I just want to make, because I think both can be empowering, I agree with that. But one observation I want to make is that Give Directly makes one-time transfers. And so the statement, you know, to say people are on the payroll of Westerners, I think is not quite accurate either technically or conceptually. And I think that is, you know, that is an attempt to avoid a dependence dynamic.
I think, you know, it's a very big issue. It's a very big issue. It's a very big concern for me, and I think for some other people too. And I saw a comment in maybe your most recent or one-off blog post or response, basically sort of saying that you know, think about the magnitude of these cash transfers, and they sort of parachute in from the sky, and you know, that's a very real concern as to how that's going to impact people's thinking and actions and motivations in these kind of remote poor villages in Africa. And I don't know, I have not been to Kenya or any of these places. I don't have the personal experience there, but I just, boy, it's just trying to translate it to some thinking, you know, of what I know about America and American poverty. And it's a very real concern. Let's put it that way. Exactly how to model that or even frame that in one's thinking, I don't know. But, boy, if it doesn't have some potentially very serious negative feedback loops or whatever, I'd be kind of surprised.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that we're impressed with about Give Directly is the degree to which they're also focused on this question. I think when we first came across Give Directly, you know, about 2 years ago, this was one of the questions we were most concerned about. I mean, are they taking steps to try and determine whether it is causing problems and whether the transfers are being spent appropriately? And I think what we know about them, what we lay out in the review, gives us confidence that, you know, that they're trying to identify these problems where they exist. They're certainly finding, like, some problems, and, you know, that gives me more confidence to hear that than I would in an organization that says they found none, because I'm, like you, I believe that some exist. From a personal perspective, I think the single biggest question that I had about Give Directly, you know, over the course of the fall of 2012, as we were considering recommending them, was this question about the windfall cash transfer and how appropriate that was. And whether that would just lead people to make really bad decisions. Aside from the data, which I think makes a reasonably compelling case that people, by and large, at least report spending the money in reasonable ways, you know, my visit to Kenya to see what, you know, to meet the people who have and have not received transfers, you know, added to the confidence that I have that, that, you know, while that remains a concern, it's not something that is, you know, obviously being done wrong by any means. You know, the money, what people tend to use the money on are, you know, large single purchases that, you know, move them from being extremely, extremely poor, you know, largely not having a metal roof to instead, just being really, really poor with a metal roof. And so they go from, you know, a situation where they're constantly replacing their roof and getting rained on to one where they're not. And, you know, that's the type of thing where, you know, I think it helps me to have that example in mind as one of the ways in which people use this money. In that, you know, seeing that situation and imagining it relative to imagining the, you know, average situation that we might imagine if, you know, if someone who's part of the urban poor in America received a transfer of a similar portion of their annual income, you know, I think it's a more reasonable way to think about the what's actually going on.
Yeah, this reminds me. I mean, we've put out a fair amount of content after our recommendations in the form of blog posts, and I can send those out after the call. But you know, I think part of what we're trying to address here is people who are kind of not understanding the more gut argument for cash. I know that's what Will said in his response to my comment, Will Crouch. And so, you know, that post that we did on that is called The Case for Cash, and it came out, I think, shortly after the cost-effectiveness post. And, you know, that talks about things like what Ellie's saying and kind of, you know, is more of an attempt to capture our gut feeling and why our gut agrees with this. But, you know, I've also emphasized that our criteria agree with it as well.
I think, you know, part of the case for GiveDirectly, I think a large part of the case that you're making is that the other organizations you've looked at are not good or don't meet your criteria in some way. And I know you're not in the business of, you know, relative rankings of all the organizations that you don't think are very good or you don't think are, you know, top tier. But I guess for me personally, I feel like there would be some value in communicating why you like GiveDirectly by also communicating, say, you know, a 4 or a 5 ranked organization and saying, hey, you know, we looked at 50 other organizations. We think, you know, such and such water organization is 4th, and, you know, the reason we don't like them is because, you know, we can't figure out if the water from their wells is actually, you know, cleaner. But, you know, if it was cleaner, it would do this and this and this and this, but we're uncertain about this, and that's why we rank it below GiveDirectly, or just something more in detail. At least that would help me understand the argument for, you know, why GiveDirectly is better than all of these other organizations that that there's very little detail on, but I guess I intuitively think that there's some of them that do a lot of good.
Right. I mean, so first off, I mean, we do publish a page that explains our view on all the organizations and the areas we consider. You know, so in this past year, we've published pages, though we don't, you know, really make a big deal about the fact that we did, you know, about organizations working on water, working on tuberculosis control, working on other neglected tropical diseases. You know, those all, our views on all of these organizations are up on the website. You know, I think one example that's interesting to discuss that also relates, Eric, to one of the questions you asked over email is, you know, some of these other areas of proven cost that seem like they offer opportunities to give to proven cost-effective activities. You know, I think the area where we spent the most time in 2012 was looking for an opportunity to give money to increase immunization coverage. You know, we hadn't done a ton of work trying to investigate the evidence of effectiveness of different immunization programs, but, you know, we acted with, I think, a reasonable prior that, you know, were we to do that research, we would find strong evidence of effectiveness. And when we went looking for immunization programs that we could support, we found a situation where it appeared as if, agreement was so strong among the major funders in international aid that immunizations were good, that the obstacle to additional coverage was, you know, not additional dollars, but instead other factors, like not coming up with the system that reaches people in really rural locations. And that's not something that's easy to give money to and affect change. And so there's a lot of detail about the process we used looking into immunizations this year, or in 2012, immunizations is one example. You know, that page is up on our website. But it would be, you know, I think it is perhaps good to keep in mind that, you know, our view is of all the things that we have looked at over the years, GiveDirectly is the second most highly ranked organization. And, you know, our views on the other things we've looked at are also public, so we would appreciate feedback if you think we've missed something in those assessments.
It's a little depressing, actually. You know,
yeah,
you look at these so many charities I've sort of expressed my opinions on GiveDirectly, and I was actually a little more positive on SCI, but you guys kind of told me about many of the issues you had with them, and so I sort of see why you had difficulty making a strong recommendation on SCI. And it's a little frustrating that, you know, there's hundreds of charities, and it's so difficult seemingly to find charities that meet your standards. And I don't know what to say about that. I guess it's a little frustrating as a donor.
Let me add it. It's something that is a concern of mine, and I'm not sure whether this is the appropriate forum to discuss it, but I have heard feedback from a number of organizations that you've evaluated who say that they have sent you material and, you know, didn't really get a response from you as to it. So I guess this is part of the problem, that they feel that they've been trying to do the right thing by you, and it's just, I mean, it may be that the stuff they sent you was no good. I don't know. Quite likely. But just in terms of the educative role that I'd hope that GiveWell would have with the charity sector, in terms of saying, this is how you need to present your information if you're going to get a high ranking from GiveWell, feel that there's something lacking there.
Yeah, that's possible. And it's something that we'd be happy to talk more about. You know, I think we've been generally, I mean, we talk to organizations, we get materials from them, and we don't always get back to them right away. But I think that what Ellie's saying is real, that it's been legitimately hard to find organizations that are kind of getting us the information we need. A lot of times, I think that's because the information doesn't exist. It's just like not standard practice to kind of collect and organize the information we're looking for the way we want it. And by the way, Peter, it would be helpful to know which organizations these are if you're able to share that. It doesn't have to be on this call.
Yeah, okay. I can do that later.
Great.
One other quick comment I'll throw out. It's interesting hearing, talking with you guys on this kind of call here, and you guys have obviously, you know, it's a phone call, it's verbal, different communication style here than you have in sort of the more formal reporting that you sometimes do on the GiveWell site. I do think early on, you know, early in GiveWell's days, you guys did a lot on the blog, and some of it was a little flamboyant or inflammatory or both, and there were some downsides to that. But I do think that your focus has kind of narrowed, maybe I think, in the blog in the last few months to really just the two or three that you're recommending, you know, AMF, SCI, GiveDirectly, and you don't seem to talk as much about other charities that are interesting because they're pretty good but not good enough, or charities that are bad or what have you, as you did 2 and 3 years ago. And it's hard to address some of that stuff formally, but it's kind of in the informal language of a blog post. It might be nice to see, you know, some of the stuff that you're saying. We looked at water charities, and, you know, for all the people out there who are interested in water, we were interested in it too, but the problem is we don't know if the water improved, which you basically just said on this phone call 10 minutes ago. Or, you know, what the problems you see with the surgery charities are, or all these other kind of things that, you know, you guys spend a lot of time and so see all these things. And those of us, you know, who are not internal to GiveWell, wonder why there aren't, you know, good water charities or good surgery charities. I think if you could share that stuff, you know, even even in that informal blog style, I'd be interested in reading some of it.
Or here's, I mean, this is a big new enterprise, but a variant of this, which would have, I think, a lot of impact, is you could compare the charitable activities of one corporation with the charitable activities of another corporation and say, forget about what's the very best in the world. This company is just talking nonsense when they say that they do good, and this company is actually really serious. They give it to very good organizations, things of that sort.
Right. So these are good suggestions. A couple comments on them. One, you know, generally with the blog, I mean, if we perceive demand for us to address a certain issue, we will. So it's always good for you guys to, you know, be continuing to send us your questions in whatever format you want, and saying, you know, I'd really like to see you talk about this. I'd really like to see a blog post about that. And usually, you know, if we hear from like two or three people that, you know, are kind of major supporters, usually that's going to cross the threshold to get a blog post. So that's something to keep in mind. You know, one issue about talking more about other organizations, there's a couple things that make this very, very hard. One is that, like, we have changed since our early days, and we used to kind of piss people off sometimes, and we've tried to reduce that. I think that's a good thing. I think it can cause us problems to get on people's bad side, to make them angry. It can stop us from getting the right relationships with the right charities that are going to be the top charities. So, you know, but as part of that, we've become much more careful about posting information about charities and posting thoughts about charities. So we're very attentive now to issues like, don't write about an organization without giving it a heads up. Don't, like, share information an organization sent you without checking if it's okay with them. And what this does is that it makes it really, really slow to write anything about the vast majority of organizations, because the vast majority of organizations are very sensitive when it comes to PR. And so what happens is, you know, if there's some organization we haven't had much interaction with, we haven't recommended them, but we want to write about them, it can become a very long process. It's very drawn out. It's very sensitive. It can be adversarial at times. Whereas the organizations that we recommend, we've already gotten into that. We've already kind of said, okay, you know, these are organizations that we're spending a ton of time on. We're forming some sort of, like, minor relationship with them. And so, like, it's just less of a cost to write about them. So that's, like, you know, that's just something to be aware of, that it is very time-consuming. I mean, even like, you know, frankly, our number three organization, it's a recommended organization, but there's a big difference in getting and sharing information versus the top two. And if you start going to organizations that are not on the list at all, it's just, you know, it's magnitude. It's a huge difference in efficiency to talk about one of these organizations, and we've done it. I mean, we've run blog posts on charities that are critical of them, blog posts on charities that we don't recommend, and, you know, we've done it. So we know what it involves, and it is very different. You know, and another thing to keep in mind is just that GiveWell does have many competing priorities. I'm not saying this as an excuse. I'm saying this to make you aware of kind of the situation we're in and, you know, share your thoughts with us about what we should be prioritizing and not prioritizing. But basically, you know, the situation, the thing that we've really chosen to focus on over the last couple of years is that when we recommend an organization, people come to our website and they look at that organization and they ask a lot of questions. And, you know, if especially if it isn't kind of intuitive to them, they'll say, you know, what about this concern? What about that concern? And we have to feel really good about the organizations we recommend, and we have to kind of have looked into every angle and kind of, you know, really thoroughly check them out. And that creates a dynamic where organizations of who we communicate more efficiently with are much more likely to end up being something we're comfortable recommending. So that's, like, you know, that's one thing that we spend a lot of time on. We do spend a lot of time looking for recommended organizations too. So I'm not saying it all goes to deep dives, but a lot of it goes to deep dives. And then when it comes to looking for stuff, you know, there's just a lot of different places to look. There's a lot of charities out there. And so, you know, when you start to add more into the mix, like, you know, we've tried to really improve the depth of our recommendations and also the clarity of our explanations around our recommendations. But that's taken a lot of effort. And so then when you add in, you know, well, we should also be looking harder at other charities and writing more about them, you know, it just starts to add up to a lot. And that's even without dealing with this other issue that GiveWell's been dealing with for the last year, which we'll be writing a lot more about, which is this kind of larger donors large-scale philanthropy, you know, type stuff that is very different and you know, kind of really is potentially, I think, potentially going to compete for resources with the, you know, the standard top charity stuff, and that's something that we're realizing now, and we're going to have to be ready about more. So that's just that, you know, to give a sense of the different things we're struggling between and the different things we do, I mean, just doing that basic, like, figuring out which organizations are realistically going to be able to give us all the information we need to recommend them, and then getting all that information, and then writing up all that information in a way that people can follow it at all, that's where, like, a lot of our time has gone. Then adding on, you know, a lot of the other stuff people are talking about is hard. It doesn't mean it can't be done. I'm not trying to, you know, be defeatist and say, okay, well, forget it, we have other things to do, but I'm just trying to point out some of the trade-offs. Hopefully over time, as our capacity improves, these become less trade-offs, but improving capacity is maybe the most difficult job of all, and it's certainly going to be a major goal of this year.
One quick follow-up. I am interested in comments on charities that don't get recommended, specific charities, but I'm also interested in sort of the more general stuff, which doesn't necessarily always have to be specific charity stuff and might not run into all those
right.
roadblocks you've just mentioned. I mean, if you say, well, in general, when we've looked at water charities, you don't even have to throw out the specific names, or you can say, you know, try to be a little more general so you don't have to maybe have so many hurdles in front of you. The problem with water charities
yep.
is X or whatever.
Yep. Yeah, I think that's a good suggestion. We have a page that does this, but I think to make a blog post out of it is something we could do. There's some background noise. Not coming from us.
Sorry, that's probably
the
background noise is probably from me. I'm actually going to have to get off this call pretty soon. Apologies if the noise started coming in. Is all around. So thanks very much for the exchange. It's been a good opportunity to talk through some things, and I really appreciate what you said, and I think I do have a better understanding now, both from the things
Great.
That you posted and from this, of your support for GiveDirectly, and I'll certainly be in touch about the other issues that I mentioned.
Great. All right. Really appreciate it. Glad to hear that this was helpful to some degree.
Yep. Okay. I don't want to stop the rest of you going on if you have to, but as I say, I have to get off. Bye.
Thank you, Peter. Hello?
Yep. Other comments?
I'm kind of out of comment.
Me too.
I'm out
of comments. I'm sorry.
I'll offer one more comment. I think, you know, one of the things that you focused on is, you know, giving to the charities that you can recommend with the highest conviction and meeting your criteria. And I think that's good. You know, one of the things that you've learned and that I think colors all of your comments is that, you know, there's not a lot of charities that meet your criteria, and I think one of the ways that you can, influence things is to do things to help more charities meet your criteria. So I don't know if that's, you know, saying to a water charity, hey, we'll give you a $50,000 restricted grant to figure out, you know, if the water is cleaner in the wells you build. And you know, maybe it's a little bit more complicated than that, but that or those types of things to be able to you know, help a charity that is promising, maybe it's promising on two of the three criteria, but there's one that's missing, and if there's a way to help them get there, I think one of the other people I mentioned earlier in the call, you know, providing more information on what charities need to give you. To meet those criteria, but also, you know, possibly, you know, financial support if that's what it takes to do randomized control trial studies or other ways you can, you know, help charities that are in promising areas, but, you know, just don't quite meet the threshold in one way. That I think that would be, you know, another way to extend your impact beyond just, you know, dollars moved to certain organizations that are already meeting their criteria.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. It's something that we've talked about, we've thought about. I don't know that it's I don't know that it's high on the priority list right now, to be honest with you. It's just something that, like, the effort to return ratio just seems like it would be very high.
Yeah, I mean, one, you know, I think one thing that that we probably don't communicate outwardly as well as we could or should is that I don't think the situation is often, you know, Holden's example about water charities is a good illustration of why it's not so simple to find a water organization that we would rely on, but I don't think the solution is as simple as just, you know, convincing an organization to collect some data. You know, largely the, I mean, this is, you know, my impression, and so perhaps it's wrong, but, you know, it seems like the type of questions that we're asking and trying to answer are ones that are by and large not, you know, normally answered, or at least not normally answered publicly in a way that an organization can be held accountable by outsiders. And therefore, the, you know, I think the thing that is perhaps most important is finding the, you know, once you've got past the, you know, the bar that the intervention the organization is running seems particularly promising, is finding the, you know, the staff at the organization who are, you know, similarly committed to getting the right answers to the questions. And, you know, ultimately they understand so much more about the specifics of the intervention than we do that it's hard to figure out, you know, how to give money to encourage the type of documentation and assessment that we would want. And, you know, frankly, my instinct is that, you know, money, again, in this case, is not the core bottleneck to that type of assessment and sharing happening. It's more the, you know, a difference in opinion about the value of doing that, you know, that type of work. I do agree that it's really valuable for us to try and, you know, be as clear as possible and as public as possible about, you know, what organizations in general and certainly specific organizations could do differently to meet the, you know, kind of this highest standard of quality that we assign to AMF and GiveDirectly in terms of the information they share and how they answer the questions that we ask. Mm.
Yeah. I have no other comments, so thank you.
Yeah, thank you also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the main message should, I think, as always, be that you guys are continuing to do fantastic work, and if we have slight disagreements and this or that organization that doesn't detract from the general picture, that we turn to you for advice because you're way better than anything else we have.
Oh, no, thanks. We appreciate it. And, you know, we really appreciate, you know, the opportunity to have discussions like this. I mean, this is, you know, and people like you who are happy and excited to spend your evenings talking with us about our charity recommendations because, you know, that helps us improve. And, you know, that's certainly the type of, you know, discussions that we want to be having about the work we're doing. So we really appreciate it.
All right.
Well, thank you all. You know, like we said, we are planning to if it's okay with you to post this recording and put together a transcript. If anyone has any concerns about that, just send me an email or hold an email after the fact, and we can figure out how to adjust it. You know, it's not necessary, but I think this discussion will be helpful to an audience beyond just the few of us on this call. So you know, thank you very much, and have a great night.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.